Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donnell, and this is The Crimologist from Farrow and Ball, the podcast where paint and colour meet life. My own life has always been filled with colour, and lucky me, I now work as a colour expert at Farrow and Ball, which means I spend my life exploring people's innermost dreams and using colour to bring those dreams to life.
The world is colourful. I always see life in colour.
My first memory when it comes to colour is red. I thought her dress was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen.
Every day I see the power that colour has.
Do you know, I've got glasses that fit each colour room. So these are my pink ones in my pink room. And so I've got green ones over there. Neutral in my bedroom. Not that you're going up there, Patrick.
Why not? And that's why we've created this series, to explore how colour works in a room, but also how it works in our heads, our hearts, our identities.
There's loads of colours in that. The velvet dingles and what we were talking about, the cracks and the crannies always go down to dark green or dark black, don't they?
I've never done my life story through colour and everyone should do this.
Today on The Crimologist, my guest is Sky Gingell, Michelin-starred chef, writer and founder of Spring Restaurant at Somerset House, where we are today in London. Sky is originally from Australia, but trained as a chef in France before moving to the UK. She said that her home is really her refuge, but she also carries the vast landscapes and light of Australia in her. Sky, it's so lovely to be here at Spring.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to have you here. You're very welcome.
I've never eaten here in the main room. I was very lucky to come here for a fabric launch in this space.
Yeah, we do a lot of events in this space.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice. But you'll have to come and eat in the main restaurant.
Seriously, no, I will definitely come. But yeah. The room we're in.
Yes.
It's a very different vibe to the main restaurant again, because mm-hmm. you have these extraordinary relief panels, really soft, sort of pale, dirty off-white, aren't they?
Yeah.
And you've got this lovely kind of dirty green-white, this old white on the wall. So again, there's this lovely mood of calm and beautiful planting in here.
I'm quite proud of this space because we sort of reclaimed it from air, really, because it was just a kind of chute that falls right down to the bottom of kind of Somerset House, and we put a false floor in here. And so downstairs, we've got pastry kitchens, offices, and then you go down another floor, and we've got wine stores where we roll all the pasta, where we keep all our walk-in fridges. Because obviously you see this, but then there's all the machine of how you run a restaurant behind you, you know, that obviously we don't want guests to see, but we need a lot of space to kind of do all the things that we do. So yeah, so this is a kind of little reclaimed space. The kitchen's right behind that window. So if there is any noise, it is probably a little bit of the kitchen.
Well, from my limited experience here, I remember we had the most visually alluring food I've ever seen.
I mean, I think one of the things I enjoy the most is plating. I love it. For me, they're pictures that you paint, and I get a lot of joy. And I love colour in food too. I love intensity of colour in food. And actually, I think you really see that in beautiful produce grown in good, clean soil. You really see the intensity of the colours.
So the main reason we're here today, mm-hmm. we've come to talk about four colours that represent a little bit of your journey of your life. So I know actually you've repeated a colour, so which we're really excited about. So if we sort of head back to the very beginning, we're mm-hmm. going to start with the colour of your childhood. And this is obviously back in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah. When you asked me to choose the colours, I tried to not think too deeply. But actually just kind of the first thing that came to mind. So I chose Bancha, which is that kind of very olivey. I mean, I'm really bad at describing colours, but I would say it had sort of blues or black or something in it. Would that be right?
Black. Yeah.
Bit of black, yeah. And I love that colour of olive green, actually. I grew up in Australia, and I definitely think if you've grown up in that kind of vast landscape, I think it's quite like growing up in Africa, and anybody I've spoken to who's kind of grown up in Africa, they're different landscapes, but they're not dissimilar in a funny way. And I think the majesty of nature is so huge in countries like that. The skies are so vast, the seas are so strong, you know, the earth is so red. You know, we were talking about that before in terms of like the Gibson Desert. And I think it does kind of definitely get into your DNA. So, I mean, I guess there were kind of probably many colors, but the thing that I thought about when you said that was my parents. When we were little, and you know, I have an older sister, and I guess my parents were quite young, and they just got married, and they had two little children, and they wanted to buy their own house, but they had really not very much money, and so they bought a bit of land in Sydney, in the city of Sydney, but it actually just was a cliff face. is what they bought, literally a sandstone chunk of cliff. And my mother has always got incredible taste and like very kind of, in many ways, like a real visionary, I always think, and very private person, very kind of, but like really has this mind that's kind of quite amazing when she lets you see it sometimes. And they built this sort of treehouse on the side of this cliff. And as a child, it was kind of magical because it was built out on a precipice. And then it had these kind of very fine stilts that went all the way around. You went up these stairs through the cliff. And so it was very kind of mossy and green. And it was very modern. So it was like we had these kind of cement floors throughout the house, but they were dark green and they were kind of waxed, polished. So they were these sort of almost black, dark green floors. And the whole cliff was quite mossy and actually full of spiders. And, you know, there was always a sort of blue-tongued lizard coming into the sitting room or whatever. And so that's very much my early childhood, which I guess you get to a time of life where you remember. I remember my early childhood actually quite a lot better than I remember a lot of my life in the middle.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I've got these sort of strong kind of postcard images of it, whereas my 20s and 30s, when I was right in the middle of kids and work and everything, that's just all a blur. Yeah.
Green is one of those colours. Loads of people relate to green and love green because it symbolises nature, it symbolises tranquility, it symbolises calm. Obviously, you have different memories of that, you know, moss, this beautiful polished wood. It sounds an extraordinary house.
I mean, it was
kind
a beautiful
of like
house,
a modernist
yeah.
masterpiece.
Yeah, it was a beautiful house, yeah.
But does green make you feel, does it make you feel anything as well, emotionally?
I mean, green, I would say, is my favourite colour. And when I say that, I mean, it's funny. I always think it's funny to talk about a colour like blue or green, or because I think there's so many shades of, within each colour, there's just a vast range of emotions and things that you can get from any colour. But I would say in general, greens, I would be drawn to the most.
There's a gentility. Even at the darker end, I think they're quite forgiving.
Yeah.
So you have those kind of sort of much more paley sort of mints and sort of cool misty shades. And then all the mid-greens are probably most people's safe space because they're easier. They're not too demanding.
Yeah. But I would see those as very English colours, though. Like I would feel like, I think my colour palette isn't particularly English.
Yeah.
I think because from my childhood, I definitely think there are certain colours that I would go, oh, that's a very English way. That's very English to paint your house that colour. I mean, I know that's funny, but so I would never use a green. Not in my house, I don't think.
Would you wear a green?
Oh, my gosh. I am really bad at colour. I'll wear navy blue.
You are today.
I am today. I wear creams and caramels. I'll wear white.
Gorgeous with your hair.
And black. And maybe chocolate brown. I adore colour, and colour is so important to me. And I grew up in a house that was so... My mother had the wildest colours. Honestly, she was like... We had hot pink staircases with yellow wall. I mean, she's got... She puts fabric on her walls. It's like a little magic box, what my mother's mind. And she's so brave with colour. And she's actually got this very beautiful sense of colour, I would say. But I like clean and clear colours. That's what I'm drawn to. I'm not often very drawn to, like, dirty colours.
And that's kind of the antithesis of what you're saying about your mother. So do you think you wanting cleaner, softer colours was a backlash to all that vivid strength and everything from growing up?
Well, mainly, I mean, in my house, it's mainly white.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sky.
Are you surprised?
I'm going to have to come round and persuade you.
I know. Well, I love colour, but I love colour pop. I'm obsessed. If you see my work here, and everybody knows, I love a white frame around everything. So all of the food, I'm obsessed with white space around. It's the negative space where things pop from. But I do have only two rooms in my house that are painted, and that's my bedroom. And they're both Farambourg colours, actually. And I've got this tiny little office dining room off my kitchen, and it's really dark chocolate brown. I said I wanted a black room, and my sister said to me, you can't have a black room. But I felt like I could have a black room, but it's almost black. And I've got a very pale pink gloss ceiling.
That sounds glorious. Chocolate and pink are just heaven together, aren't they?
I've got that, and then I've got a very navy blue, which is also a Farambourg colour, bedroom.
Okay.
So just two, and all the other rooms are white in my house.
Quite interestingly, in your bedroom, which is, you know, for a lot of people, their place of sanctuary, that you went for a darker colour.
I wanted a womb.
Okay.
I wanted something really nurturing.
So we're going to move on to the second colour.
Yeah.
And this is the colour of your youth. And this is quite interesting. Again, I'm sure this is obviously related to Australia.
Yeah, the yellow. So the colour I've chosen from my, I guess it is my youth, the mid bit from being a child into an adult, that kind of very important transition, is babouche. That, I think, is really because my mother loved yellow and she used quite a lot of yellow in her work and her decorating. And the final house I lived in with my parents is what's known as an Australian terrace house. They're actually gorgeous and they're I have never seen them anywhere else except in Australia. And they're a type of sort of two up and two down, but with very ornate balustrades.
And you have that lovely ironwork, don't you?
You have all the ironwork.
I'm been to Sydney and Melbourne. Yeah. I'm sure I walked down the street full of jacaranda trees.
Exactly.
And these beautiful terraces with this lovely ironwork running.
Yeah. So we lived in quite a big one of those in Paddington, which is an area of Sydney. And I had my first sort of grown-up bedroom. And it was yellow. It was really sort of, it was a big bedroom, which was amazing. And I actually had my own little terrace and it was this yellow bedroom. And my mother gave me this really beautiful painting by an Australian artist. It was huge and it was on the wall. And so I think that was my bedroom from when I was probably about 13 or 14 until I left home. And I think bedrooms have always been my sanctuary, really. I mean, my bedroom at home is definitely my sanctuary. And I have incredibly fond memories of that house and that bedroom, you know. And I changed a lot during that time as well. Like, I grew up and I realized that I probably didn't want to live in Australia. And I started a law degree and I left a law degree and I fell in love with cooking and I moved to Paris from that bedroom. So in many ways, that colour and that room represents the last time I ever really lived in Australia.
That's really interesting because it's, and also the fact that you had a yellow bedroom, because I got absolutely pilloried because I was sitting in my yellowish bedroom telling everybody not to paint their bedroom yellow because it was too energising for a bedroom.
Yeah.
And everybody just went, but you're in a yellow bedroom. And I went, oh, it's kind of caramel, because yellow is such an energy colour. And kind of when you're in your bedroom, in
and
theory,
you
need to switch off
down
and decompress.
But when you wake up in the morning, hello.
Oh, heaven. And if you've got sun streaming in, even better.
Yeah. You're right, actually. I mean, I don't think I'd paint my bedroom yellow now. But it's interesting. I really loved that bedroom. And I think it's funny. I mean, I've certainly had a very complicated relationship with who I am. Like, where do I belong, really? Because I grew up in Australia and there's a part of me that feels so Australian, even now, 40 years on. And I don't feel English really at all, but I love England and London has been my city of choice and it's been so good to me. And it's my favourite city in the world. I adore London. You know, I mean, this is the city I've raised my children in and I've created my own family here. But that pull of that landscape and where I grew up by the sea has completely defined who I am as a human being.
Like, you're talking about big skies, those open spaces and everything, which you certainly don't get that in London.
I always describe it when I get back on the, you know, especially if I've been away and if I've been to Australia or I've actually just come back from Costa Rica, which was incredible, and the nature there and the skies and the stars and the vast beaches. It was so beautiful. And in Australia, you feel like there's this amazing Australian writer called Tim Winton, and he describes camping up in the Bungle Bungles, which is up at Kakadu in the Northern Territory, and the skies being so big and laying on the floor and having to hold on to the earth because he thought he was going to fall into the sky. And I really understand that vastness. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense to anybody else, but you're looking up at this vast sky and you think you're just falling into it.
The yellow you've chosen, babouche, which is quite a bright sunshine yellow.
Yeah.
It's obviously named after the Moroccan slipper. You know those dye marks as you get in the souks and everything. So it's quite a vibrant yellow.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, babouche is a really interesting choice because it's really powerful and dynamic as a yellow.
How would you use babouche if you were using it in a house?
I think I did a client's job in Primrose Hill and she had a tiny, tiny, tiny kitchen. And I basically decorated everything in a lovely off-white called Schoolhouse White, which has a tiny bit of yellow. And then in the lower units, so below eye level, I painted in babouche and gloss. And there are only four cupboards. So it's like just lovely little splash of dynamic yellow. And then everything else was one white.
That's how I would use it if I... Maybe I'll paint my kitchen yellow next.
Go on then.
Do you think?
Don't blame me though if you don't like it.
I might blame you, but I do love that idea.
It's really... I think if you keep, especially really strong, if you keep them below eye level, it's better.
Yeah. Maybe I'll go for yellow.
Oh, do.
Why not? It's funny, I think this room could have gone definitely two ways, and it could very easily could have gone down clubby, male, dark, couldn't you? And we wanted it to feel very kind of light and delicate.
So we are in the main dining room at Spring at Somerset House.
Yes.
So Skye's sort of beautiful restaurant, and it's unbelievably tranquil in here. And considering in the middle of London, right on the Thames, on the Strand, this quietness and stillness. I mean, you've got this what kind of pale O'Donnell sort of grass cloth,
yes,
almost, and then a beautiful, quite a clean white, and then just these lovely caramel tones on your upholstery, this kind of pale tobacco.
You know, a lot of my life actually has been about trying to define who I am in a kind of world that I don't necessarily feel that comfortable in. I feel like I really wanted it to feel very like female, you know, and I wanted to celebrate actually the fact that it was kind of a restaurant headed up by a woman.
So we are moving on. And again, this must be really difficult for anybody to think about, but your colour, your defining decade.
I know, I chose pink, and I chose pink round, which I love, and I tell you why, because I love pink, and I feel that Spring is quite, I know although the walls are kind of O'Donnell, for me Spring is quite pink. For me, it was very responsive when someone said defining decade, and I feel like that probably the last 10 years of my life has been probably the happiest, I mean, which maybe sounds strange, but I think Spring's given me more happiness than anything else that I've ever done. And it, for me, it signifies my independence, my doing things on my terms, cooking just the way I want to cook. You know, it's such a personal journey for me, cooking. And I'm so excited and happy if people enjoy it. But at the same time, I do the food that I really feel is right for me and resonates with me. And I feel like I've raised the kids and you know, I kind of been through all of that, and I feel really happy and proud that they're off in the world and doing their own thing. You know, I feel like that was a huge body of work, whether that sounds right or wrong. Like, I took it very seriously bringing my kids up, and, you know, I wanted them to be well-equipped and happy and in the world and independent, and hopefully to find that, you know, my work has given me so much pleasure and happiness, you know. And I only wish for them that they would find something that would spur them and they'd feel passionate and things about. I feel like I don't have to really prove myself to anyone. I'm not in the thick of it anymore. It's not my time, you know, but it's a time that maybe I can give back and be a mentor and run a really nice business, and lots of things are important to me in business that aren't about the bottom line or making money or, you know, whatever. And I feel that this is my decade, and for some reason this place, Spring, represents all of that to me. And when I think of Spring, I think of pink.
And so, just to explain to our listeners, you're going to be celebrating 10 years of Spring October?
October the 14th, yeah.
So obviously you've been coming in here for 10 years, obviously a huge labour of love, but every day when you walk through the door here, do you kind of, I'm so happy. I mean, does this place still fill you with joy?
It fills me, you know, it's a funny old business, like running restaurants. And, you know, if I'm really honest, if someone said to me, I could never ask anyone to invest in a restaurant because you're simply not going to make a lot of money from doing it. You know, there's just not a lot of money in restaurants, and they're so labor intensive and the rents are so high. And so you have to be in it because you love it. That's the way I look at it. You know, it's actually not about making huge amounts of money. It's fraught with issues, and that's restaurants. You know, every morning there's a disaster when you come in. Either the fridges are broken, the air conditioning's not working, the fire alarm's gone off in the middle of service, you know. So, but I thrive on busyness. I really like the busy short-term goals of a restaurant and the kind of stress. It sort of suits me. And I feel very proud of it. I feel very proud of the business that we are and like the people who work here and an amazing team that we have. And it's really exciting to work with young people, and They're so kind of energetic. It's lovely. So I feel very grateful that I have this. I have the privilege to continue working. I probably got another 15 years in me, maybe 20. And, you know, I think very much have thought, how do I want to live that 20 years? Who do I want to be? What could be my legacy be? Like, in terms of, not in an arrogant way, my legacy, but, you know, I think in terms of mentorship, that's incredibly important, you know. And so, yeah, I'm doing exactly what I want to do.
I was actually talking to some of your lovely team earlier, and you have a significant amount of women in the kitchen here,
don't
you?
Yeah.
It's like 80%, somebody's saying, pretty much.
It probably is, yeah. I mean, I would say there's probably, of 24 chefs, probably 15 or 16 are women. And that's really nice, because when I started cooking a very long time ago in the 80s, I trained in Paris and I was the only female in the kitchen. And really until quite recently, you may have seen one woman in pastry, but in the main kitchen, you'd very rarely see women. And that's really important to me, because it's given me so much pleasure. And we attract women, and I think that's probably because there's a female head chef there. But yeah, we've got a lot of women who work here, and I love working with women.
Well, I don't know if that's a woman thing versus a man thing, but it's the quietest kitchen. I know we can hear the odd noises off,
yeah,
but it's very quiet.
Well, I think one of the things that is really nice, it's probably not normally so quiet, and they've been told they can't have the music on this morning because of this. So, but I think having men and women in the kitchen is a really nice balance. And I think it's not a shouty kitchen, that kitchen. It's a safe, happy kitchen, you know, that has stressful moments for sure. You know, sometimes there's a lot of pressure, but it's really important to me that it's a safe space and it's happy. And I mean, I grew up in the era of, you know, people shouting at you in the kitchen and stuff like that. And I just don't think that serves anybody, you know, so...
In any environment, it doesn't
really
work, does
it? In any environment, yeah. You know, I mean, as cliched as it sounds, I'm a much better cook when I'm in a great mood.
I get that, even as an amateur cook.
Yeah.
I get that. If I'm cooking supper and my head's in a weird space, yeah, nothing ever works or nothing tastes the same. If I'm really happy, I know I'm putting so much more love into it, and suddenly...
Yeah, and you're connected to the food, and it's...
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm the same, you know, because obviously the way I cook at home is like you would cook at home. I love home cooking. You know, people often say to me, two questions I get all the time. What's it like to be a woman in a male-dominated world? That is the number one question I get. And the number two is, how do I cook restaurant food at home? And I'm like, why would you want to? Like,
please tell me you eat poached eggs on sourdough or
something. Oh, my God. I mean, if you wanted to, my fridge has just eggs, always sourdough on the counter, butter, a tin of anchovies probably. If you have eggs in the fridge, you have a meal fit for a king. I always say that. You can do anything with eggs. And they're the ultimate comfort food. But I think it's really, like, especially when you're invited to someone's house for dinner, you don't want to do restaurant. Restaurants are a different experience. And houses, the intimacy of, and I guess all the things, you know, we've been talking about, you know, and how my house is really important to me. The colors are really resonate and mean something to me. And that intimacy of having someone for dinner at home is such a special thing.
Yeah, long gone are the days of dinner parties. I think we're all much more relaxed about how we cook for people when they come over. So just going back to Pink Ground. So we have a duo of pinks, which is Pink Ground, and it's kind of slightly deeper sibling setting plaster, which is a little bit earthier, a little bit more browning. So I know, actually, you've repeated Pink Ground, which we're really excited about, because it's kind of really lovely that your defining decade and where you are now are probably a similar place. Do you find those gentle pinks just very calming, very soft, very easy to live with?
I think it really leans into maybe just the feminine side of me.
Okay.
It's interesting. I don't know why. So spring, I see with pink, and I think if you went into the women's bathroom at spring, it's pink. It's got pink tiles and also the pink sofas. And I just sort of see, I don't know, I see it as being a pink restaurant, even though it's not. And then I suppose the single most other important thing that's happening in my life, which I am so excited about, is being a grandmother. So excited to love someone, like in that kind of really like uncomplicated sort of way. But I've got a little spare bedroom, and my girls have moved out of home now, and one's having a baby, and I'm making a little nursery next door to my house. But I painted it very pale pink. She's having a little boy, but I just wanted to hug the room a little bit, if that makes sense. And I think that color does that. So I painted it pink, and I felt like that was to welcome him.
Well, there's that whole thing, isn't there?
Yeah.
So was it kind of, is it Victorian Edwardian, where boys wore pink and girls wore blue? So
oh,
that's a modern sort of condition of girls wear pink, boys wear blue.
No, I mean, I know that sometimes people go, oh, I'm doing a nursery, I'm doing a child's bedroom, I'm just going to do it neutral, not blue or pink. But I genuinely chose this sort of pink because I think it's the thing I'm the happiest about. And to me, there's a happiness in the colour pink.
I'm a big fan of pink, and pink is absolutely having its moment. It's been having its moment, I think, since the start of the pandemic, because it's warm, it's nostalgic, I think it has a lot of comforting connotations for a lot of people. I just painted, I live with my mother, slightly kind of half caring for her.
Oh, wow.
And we've just painted the hall at home, and it's a classic British hall, you know, with filtered light, and it just brings this, as you say, almost kind of a hug.
Yeah.
It's kind of a really reassuring.
It's a very light hug, isn't it? It's very gentle reassurance. Yeah. I guess you're in the era that you're in, aren't you? We've only got today. And so I'm not really wanting for anything anymore. I mean, I have aspirations and goals for sure, you know, and I love challenging myself and doing new stuff. But I'm not greedy for anything, if that makes any sense. And who knows what the future holds, you know?
I love that. And actually, when I was looking at your colours in terms of pink brown, and kind of in terms of food, I couldn't quite think of much pink food. I suppose some
rhubarb.
Smoked fish might be rhubarb, or some of the lovely tones you get in treviso and radicchio and endive and everything.
From Verona,
what's that gorgeous blush, sort of whitish one with
Castelfranco, with the specks on it?
Is that not the most beautiful leaf in the world?
There's also another one, a pink one called Radicchio di Verona, and it is literally hot pink with white. Yeah, it's really beautiful on the leaves. Lots of things that you cook, even pomegranates have a level of pink. Red, but it's kind of got a pink type. So you do see pink in food. I mean, it's very hard to make food the star of the show when you have a colour behind it. For me, it needs that kind of white so you can see. I can only describe it as some reductive space, negative space. And I think if you have coloured plates, I mean, they are gorgeous. And obviously at home, if you just, you know, but I think if you really want to make food sing on a plate, it works for me very well with white.
I do use white plates at home. I think most of us probably do use white plates, but I actually do have these quite bright sort of emerald green plates, which I got from David Meller. They're Japanese and they have this slightly broken colour, and actually salads look really, especially things like roasted squash and everything with lentils look really good on that.
And I adore that too. Like, I feel like definitely at home, I love oddness too. I don't think you need a whole set of everything. Don't think I've got a whole set of glasses or a whole set of, you know, I think it's lovely to have a sort of beautiful kind of green salad bowl and then something else and, you know, just things that you love, you know, and I love that magpie kind of thing that you can do at home, where I think restaurants are always slightly more curated, aren't they? And
a bit of that's why and splatter plates and stuff.
Yeah, and that's why actually it's such a beautiful experience to eat at home, because it's such a different, you don't have to stick to all the rules kind of restaurant.
So this, Sky, is the moment where we gift you a colour. So
amazing.
Here's your sample pot of what we call Cook's Blue.
Okay.
But we're calling it Blue Sky.
Thank you.
And just so you can see the colour, it's a really beautiful, it's a big sky. It's your Australian big desert
gorgeous
sky, coastal sky. It's a really saturated, sort of mid-ish blue rather than too dark.
If I said Wedgwood blue, would that be wrong?
It is kind of. It's slightly less lilac than a Wedgwood blue,
right,
but it's getting in that direction. Yeah. It's moving in that direction. It's a really good, fresh, optimistic blue, almost a little bit like your bunch, but there's some black in it, so it's not too vibrant, it's not too shouty. It's the big sky blue.
Where would you put that in a house?
I love them in bathrooms, actually. Kind of love a blue. It's probably a bit of a cliche, but I love a blue bathroom because I always think it plays really well with classic white sanitary, although these blues, they're kind of quite clean but deep.
I mean, it's beautiful.
So, Sky, it's been so lovely to join you here today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I've loved it. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for coming.
If you want to find out more about Sky, then find her at Sky Gingell on Instagram. You can also follow us at Far and Ball. And if you've enjoyed today's conversation, please, please do share it with all your friends. My guest next week is the brilliant dancer, Eric Underwood. The Cromologist is a Far and Ball and Feast Collective production. Producer Sarah Cudden. And until the next one, goodbye and hugs.